listening to Merdeka Memories, a series about the challenges and opportunities faced by the Merdeka generation, men and women who were born in the 1950s and how their experiences have defined the Singapore spirit. I'm Chew Wee Lin, and in this episode, I speak to Abdul Rahman Khan Gulab Khan, who spent more than two decades in the police force, most of them in the Criminal Investigation Department, or CID. Mr. Abdul Rahman recounts how he got shot on the job in the 1970s and how quick wits, compassion, and integrity have served him well throughout his career. Do note that there are graphic descriptions of violence and death in this episode, which some might find disturbing.
My name is Abdul Rahman Khan. I was born on 28th of January, 1951. Born in Malaysia, in the state of Johor, and was brought by my late parent to Singapore when I was only a few months old, and since been staying here. I became a Singapore citizen in the late 1970. Soon after I received my citizenship, I applied to join the police force, and I joined the force in February 1971. Singapore then was not that fully developed. The government was just establishing themselves after independence. Those days, a lot of tribe societies, crime was quite high those days, you see. That's one of the reasons why I joined the police force. I like to see Singapore to be in peace. I would like to help in solving all those crime rates those days, you see. Armed robberies, bank robberies are quite common those days. And my aim then was that I do not want to be a uniform policeman. I want to become a detective. So I was only in the uniform for about a couple of months. After that, I applied to join the crime branch. Those days, they call it as a special round officer. Those days, not easy, you know. You have to become a plainclothes officer, not easy. You have to go through a lot of processes before you can become a full-fledged detective. I was lucky because I was brought up in a Chinese community. I live in a kampong village where my family was the only Muslim family there. The rest are all Chinese, my neighbors. And I can speak a few dialects. That helps me to become a detective. So that's the most important thing, like, you know. You can speak their lingo, one thing, and then the trust. Then they start to open up. At the moment, I can speak fluent Hokkien. Those days, I can speak to you too, so. So in the beginning, when I joined as a detective, I was attached to then the Rural West Division, which is situated at Bukit Panjang, where 10 Mile Junction now is situated. My first case that I managed to be selected as a detective then was, there was this spate of housebreaking in the kampongs, where the targets are old folks. A lot of them were bluffed into allowing these robbers, thieves, to come into their premises. They are illiterate. They do not know. Those days, they said, Cengunang, just flash something. So the old people will buy it, thinking that no, they are real government officers. So I managed to get all my contacts. They gave me the information who are the likely person who could be involved. Because among the underground people those days, they know, no, who is good in this line, who is good in that line, in the commission of the crime. So subsequently, I told my boss, we conduct a raid where we pick up all these people and subsequently manage to solve all those cases. And it's from there that, no, my boss was happy because qualified detective those days, they don't have the intel on the ground to find out who are these people. So this group of Malay youth who went around robbing all these old folks. Okay. So managed to get all these people, put them behind bars. And that's where my aptitude of becoming a detective comes up.
In 1973, a minor traffic accident involving a car and a bus turned into a major police case.
there was this case of where a detective was shot dead at East Coast Road due to a traffic accident. If I'm not wrong, it's in 1973. It involves an accident with a bus. And then this plainclothes officer came down to try and settle the issue where he was just gunned down by the gunman.
Firearms were not uncommon in Singapore in the early 1970s.
You have the connection, you just can rent a gun or you can bring in the gun those days quite easily from across the border, Thai, Philippines, Indonesia. Very easy to get those days.
The detective's gun was also stolen after the shooting.
So that was considered a very big case. With the gunman shooting the police officers, the whole police force went round hunting for who is actually this gunman. By then, I already was selected a full-fledged detective. Eh? So I and my colleagues in the Rural West Division, we went round contacting our sources to find out who could be this gunman who viciously killed a policeman. We managed to get one who says that in Singapore, during that time, the only person who will shoot a policeman when confronted, the person just gave us a nickname by the name of Botak. Botak, we do not know who is Botak by then. But my group and myself, we went around contacting all our sources and then finally we managed to establish who Botak was. And it happened to be my grandmother's neighbor in Malaysia. So I told my boss, okay, I'll go up and try and establish who actually this Botak is. Because we only know the nickname Botak, we don't have his full name or that. But now we know that no, he's staying at this kampung in Johor. So I went up. This Botak father was a farmer. So approached him and said, hey, where's your son? He said, my son working in Singapore. I said, eh? I said, where? Maybe I can go and look for him, chit-chat with him, no? Then he said, I don't know where he works in Singapore. Then I said, you happen to have his photo or not? Who knows, I can bump into him in Singapore. So the good old man gave me the photo and then his full name also. So with that photo and his full name, I came back and then we managed to establish his full name and that he made a passport in Kukup, Johor, to enter into Singapore. So from there, we managed to establish his full identity. And then finally, we managed to locate him in one of the apartments in Cabernet Road. Cabernet Road is just situated behind the Istana. He was then staying with this cabaret girl. So knowing his background that no, he will shoot policemen. So we decided to stake him out, six of us. Okay. So we positioned ourselves at the apartment itself. The leader of my group, Mr. Chandran Pillay, he can speak Cantonese fluently. So Mr. Pillay called the girl and spoke to the girl in Cantonese. He said, hey, is Botak in? You tell Botak that no, better get out from the house because police know your whereabout and they're on the way to raid the apartment. So he just put down the phone. By then, we already positioned ourselves. Myself was just behind the letterbox to the apartment at the ground floor level staircase. Mr. Pillay was behind me at the entrance of that apartment. Okay, the rest was scattered around, some behind, some at the car park, all that. Then shortly later, we heard footsteps, running footsteps. Armed with his photograph, we know how he looks like. So true enough, he appeared. So he appeared and then Mr. Chandran Pillay disguised himself as a car washer wearing sarong, all that, okay? Just go and then from behind give him a neck lock to subdue him. However, I saw him just pulling out his gun. So I just rush in with both my arm hold on to the whole gun. So we are struggling. Somehow he managed to fire three rounds. So Chandran Pillay also had his trigger finger stuck in the trigger guard of the weapon that he has to prevent him from firing, but somehow he managed to steal the fire because then was a Smith and Wesson. Okay, Smith and Wesson is quite easily fired. Okay, somehow during the struggle, he managed to push the barrel into my stomach. So Chandran Pillay was shouting that, no, his finger cannot take it anymore because his finger is stuck there, you know. So somehow I managed to just push the barrel out of my stomach and there was a shot fired and it burns. So Chandran Pillay and then another colleague of us rush in and they also return fire point blank at him. He had 3 rounds of firing on his body, okay, but he was still struggling. He was still struggling, okay. Then I think one of the shot hit him on the head. Only when he was hit on the head that he loosened up. So I managed to take the weapon from him, and then he was struggling to his last breath, I think, for about a few minutes before he goes off. All the resources from the police, from the CID came in, okay, and then they subsequently managed to trace that the weapon that he was having was another stolen police weapon that was with him. The gun that he took from the dead detective at East Coast subsequently was found, was traced in another country.
Your injuries, how bad was it?
Actually, the injuries is a slight one. I managed to squeeze the barrel out of my stomach, and then when he pulled the trigger, a bullet just grazed my stomach. That one hurts, yes, hurt lah, you know. But the most hurt one is the jab that you receive in hospital. Because it's a lead bullet, you need to go for this jab to prevent lead poisoning. I have to go for 3 jab. The jab is more painful than the bullet that grazed my stomach. Then for that, at the end of the day, the police commended all 6 of us. Our leader, Mr. Pillay, got the Gallantry Award, while the rest of us has the High Commendation Certificate. So from there, my interest in crime goes further. I applied to join the CID. Initially, I was selected and I was posted to the Malay and Others Unit, I mean Malay Indian Eurasian Sikh, which handles more to gangsterism. Those days, they have the Chinese group, the Hokkien group, the Teochew group detective who handles this group of criminals and gangsters, you see. Because those days, the clans are very smart. They are clans, okay? They don't easily leak information. You can arrest them and we interrogate them, all is that. They won't tell you. They won't divulge their gang matters to the police, all that. Not like today's so-called gangsters, all that. You just shout at them, threat at them, they will vomit everything out. But not those days. Those days, you really need to have intelligence. You really need to have underground contacts. So that's the reason why those days, we have those detained under the criminal law, Section 55. Famous, those days, Section 55.
Section 55 is also known as the Criminal Law Temporary Provisions Act, or CLTPA. The act is used mainly in cases relating to secret societies, drug trafficking and loan sharking.
So they have this so-called criminal law where they are detained for 2 years. After 2 years, they will review his case, you see. So that's where they decide whether to detain them further. Some were even detained for a few years. I remember where we detained a group whereby the hitman was detained for almost 15 years before he was actually released on police supervision.
Do they still have this law?
They still have, but nowadays, from what I can see, is that not much of this criminal law is being enforced nowadays, because nowadays they go more on evidence. So you can see that nowadays, with all the technologies that you have, those days we don't have all this, you see. We depend on the detective itself, the officer itself, his intel, to get the evidence. Those days in the early 70s, 80s, all that, we don't have these special units in the police force, okay? When you entangle your gunman, you are the frontline officers, okay? You're going to confront them, no? Today, no. Today, we have the tactical team to go and engage with them, all that, see? Then scene of crime. Okay, those days I still remember murder scenes. Okay, we don't have what they have today is a scene of crime unit. If I'm not wrong, the scene of crime unit was established in late 70s, whereby this group of officers are trained especially for scene of crime investigation to help the divisional officers in collation of evidence, photography, all of that. Those days, we are everything. We are the photographer, we are the sketcher, we are the searcher, everything you do yourself, okay? Whereby, you know, you have to search the decomposed dead body of the person who was found with maggots all around. You put your hand in the pocket to retrieve whatever in the pocket and you can find your full of maggots in your hand, okay? I still remember, if you remember, the Spiros case.
On the 12th of October, 1978, a massive explosion took place on an oil tanker called the ST Spiros, which was under repair at Singapore's Jurong shipyard. The explosion was followed by a flash fire that swept through the engine and boiler rooms. 76 people died and 69 others were injured in the incident, which some have called Singapore's worst industrial accident.
I was then with the homicide squad where we deal with all unnatural death cases. One afternoon, we were informed of this explosion at Jurong shipyard. Okay, so we went there. You see, it's a terrible state. And I spent the whole week at the mortuary, Singapore General Hospital, because I was then given the task of identification of the next of kin and the body. And those days, the mortuary was very small. If I'm not wrong, they only have about 35 freezer. Okay, and we had then was 70 over dead bodies. Okay, and they're just lying on the floor, decompose all that, see? Because we just can't dispose it until we find the next of kin who can identify. Some are badly burned, beyond recognition some. So those beyond recognition, you have to do superimpose, dentures, all this that. Today, very easy. You have DNA, all this that, very easy to do. Those days, they don't have these technologies. And then I still remember there's one case where the family came and then we show the actual husband, He said, that's not my husband. That's not my father. So went round and round and round. Finally, I have to talk to the wife, you know. I have to find out, hey, look, you tell me, your husband, you describe your husband, in, out of your husband. We have this body here, which you say is not your husband. So you describe. And then finally, she opened up. And then he said, my husband has a particular mole at that particular location. And we show, because before the actual decomposition of that body, we did take photo. Then we show, say, look, is this the mole that you are referring? She broke down. Yeah. Then to confirm it, we do the dental, okay? Just to get 100% confirmation of the identity of the body. So subsequently, we managed to identify all.
Did it ever take a psychological toll on you, though, this job? Because it must have been very stressful.
Initially, yes. You know, you see death, you see loved one crying for the disease. Or that. Yes. But it's part and puzzle of life. You know. And then it's our job. You know. Where we can assist, we'll assist. I still remember when I was doing this special case, whereby this Chinese woman from China who tried to escape from police custody, she was arrested for some crime. And then the police brought her back to the apartment to do a search for documents, all this, that. So somehow she managed to escape to a window and fell to her death. Okay, then I have to investigate again the officers, all this, that. So we contacted the next of kin. Is from China. So father came down to Singapore to identify the daughter. At the end of the day, we hold a coroner's inquiry. Then there are some items that we need to return. So father can speak English, but he understands Hokkien, my Hokkien. Okay? So I brought him to the canteen. Instead of offering him cold drink, normal tea, coffee, I offer him Chinese tea. So he was impressed. Then when he goes back, he wrote a letter in Chinese to me. I sent a letter for translation. He said, I was very surprised. The police investigator who interviewed me was not a Chinese, but offered me Chinese tea. Then he was very impressed on that, he said. So he says that, you know, the officer understand his feeling, all this, that. Thanking the Singapore police for all the job done, to be very fair to the daughter, all this, that. So parents were very happy with the police work here, all this, that. Even though he lost the daughter. Okay, he knows that the daughter had committed some crime. We try to satisfy everybody. Even though the deceased had committed a crime.
So it sounds like to be a good police officer, it's really not something that you can learn from books, but it's about your people skills.
Yes, yes, yes. Sometimes you have to see the situation, like, you know. To be a good police officer is commitment. You have to commit yourself, okay? I still remember when my late son was young, I think was 3 years old or that, I have to leave him all alone at home because my wife working, shift work. So leave him alone at home and then I have to attend to the case. Sometimes he didn't see me for a week. When I come back, he's sleeping. When he wake up, I already leave. Because those days, you actually, to solve the crime, you really go all out. In those days, without the present technologies, all that, you really have to go all out. And you want to solve the crime, you must solve it within a week. Because as time goes by, the offender will be further away from you. So you have to really work hard, work fast those days. You have the lead, you go. You don't stop.
I guess that hasn't changed now, right?
Today, they have a lot of backup facilities to assist them. You have technologies to help. Now you see with the cameras around, okay? Not necessary actually to go and look for witnesses. With the street cameras, it helps a lot. Just need to view and then you can see the actual scene and the actual happening. So that's why nowadays you can see the police solve cases quite fast. As much as technologies can help, but you still need the man itself, you know. So I would advise those who are interested to join the force, come forward. It's a very challenging job. If you want to join, you really have to contribute to Singapore. You have to contribute. We have to contribute because this is our country, okay? We don't have nature resources in Singapore. We depend on the people itself. I am proud that I have contributed to Singapore.